a ProCure center, providing the community with proton therapy, a cancer radiation treatment that pinpoints the tumor and seeks to minimize potential side effects and the risk of secondary tumors. More at ProCure.com.
You're listening to WILL. Let's take a look at your Champaign-Urbana weather for the rest of today. Mostly sunny with isolated showers and thunderstorms expected and a high of 85. Northwest winds of 10 to 15 miles per hour are anticipated and a 20% chance of rain, so not a huge chance of precipitation today. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low of 67 and northwest winds of 5 to 10 miles an hour. Friday, mostly sunny, 40% chance of showers and thunderstorms in the afternoon with a high of 82. We're expecting some high winds tomorrow, though, northwest winds of 10 to 15 with gusts around 25 miles per hour. Friday night, mostly cloudy with a 30% chance of showers and a low of 61. Looking ahead to the weekend, by Saturday, mostly cloudy, 50% chance of rain and a high of 74. Saturday night, low of 60, mostly cloudy. By Sunday, 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms and a high in the mid-70s. We are going to see at least a 30 to 50% chance of rain for much of next week. You're listening to WILL AM 580.
WILL programs are made possible by the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, presenting Shakespeare's Comedy of Errors and Macbeth, plus Failure, a Love Story by Philip Dawkins from July 6th through August 10th at Ewing Manor in Bloomington. Ticket information is available at thefestival.org or 309-438-2535.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. I'm Chris Berube. Expect a raucous time at this weekend's annual Pride Parade in Chicago, at least even more raucous than usual. Gay rights activists are going to be celebrating the end of DOMA, or the Defense of Marriage Act, after yesterday's Supreme Court ruling that declared the act unconstitutional. The House of Representatives adjourned in late May here in Illinois without taking a vote on a measure to legalize gay marriage in the state. Activists say that they're hopeful that the federal ruling will put additional pressure on state lawmakers to pass a law. In the meantime, figuring out just what the ruling means for same-sex couples is pretty difficult. Amanda Vinicky has this report from Springfield.
At the Equality Illinois office in Chicago, it would have been a bad day to get in late to work. Bernard Cherkosov, who heads the state's oldest LGBT rights group, says everyone was together when the Supreme Court announced its decisions just after 9 o'clock Wednesday morning.
All of our staff and interns and volunteers were all huddled together around the radios and computers in our office, waiting for the Supreme Court announcement. And we were just elated. We broke out in cheers. We felt goosebumps. It was an incredible moment to experience it together.
At least that was his initial reaction. Ask him about the nuances of what it all means, and Cherkosov backs off some.
You know, boy, it is bittersweet for us in Illinois.
Whether you're straight or gay, the groundbreaking ruling by the U.S. Supreme Court says if you're married, you deserve equal treatment when it comes to receiving federal benefits. Key in on the words federal and married. The ruling leaves it up to states what state benefits they want to give same-sex couples in various stages of commitment. And it's up to states to decide who counts as married. And in places like Illinois, same-sex couples cannot legally meet that definition. That's why Cherkosov says the decision's bittersweet.
Every day that goes by is another day where Illinois is a state of two classes of citizens, those citizens who are able to get federal recognition and those who can't.
Sounds simple if you put it like that, but it's actually a lot more complex. For starters, Illinois does allow same-sex couples to enter into civil unions, a status that gives partners the same state benefits given to married couples, like the right to visit a partner in the emergency room. It's been that way in Illinois since 2011. But civil unions do not give partners access to more than 1,100 benefits married couples get from the federal government. Everything from the joint filing of income taxes to Social Security disability benefits to getting notification if a partner serving in the military is killed or wounded in action.
The first question people might have is, what is the status of persons in civil unions in Illinois with respect to the federal benefits of marriage? In my judgment, the decision in the DOMA case today does not affect them because they're not in a marriage, quote-unquote, as recognized by state law.
That's Paul Linton, who's an attorney for the Thomas More Society, a Catholic legal organization that opposes same-sex marriage. On that point, at least, LGBT activists are in agreement. But then there's the issue of same-sex couples who wanted more than a civil union, who traveled to states like Iowa, New York, or Vermont to get married and came back to live in Illinois. Christopher Clark, a senior attorney with the gay rights group Lambda Legal, says couples in that situation have called him wanting to know what the rulings mean for them.
The questions I've been getting is, you know, will I qualify for federal benefits? And the answer, unfortunately, is a little bit of it depends.
A page on Lambda Legal's website's devoted to answering, after DOMA, what it means for you. There's a section for federal taxes, student aid, private employment issues, medical leave. One piece of advice to couples, consult an attorney. Clark explains.
And it depends because different federal benefits and programs use different rules for determining who's married. And it's generally classified into sort of two different types of rules.
For some programs, whether a spouse gets a benefit is based on where a couple resides.
So the federal government asks, are you married in the state in which you reside? And the answer for that would be no for most people who are married elsewhere but now live in Illinois, because Illinois is not recognizing their marriage as a marriage.
He says other benefits are determined using a so-called rule of celebration, where the wedding was held. So if a same-sex couple married in a place where that was legal but then moved to Illinois, federal benefits will presumably kick in. But Clark, and again on this point both sides agree, says right now everyone's in a wait-and-see mode. He says a lot of it will be up to President Barack Obama's administration to decide. Obama favors gay marriage, so Clark's hopeful for a favorable interpretation. But it's unclear. Illinois' Attorney General's office says it's still analyzing the effects of the ruling. The lack of clarity has amped up already intense calls for Illinois to pass a law legalizing same-sex marriage. The measure sponsor, Representative Greg Harris, sees it that way too.
It's just important now more than ever that we do the right thing, treat all of our families equally, and then move on to be sure that people have decent jobs, decent education for their children, decent health care. All the things are important to all families.
Harris, a Democrat from Chicago, took a lot of heat from gay rights activists for not calling the marriage bill for a vote this spring. The state Senate had passed it back in February. Still, he's noncommittal about when he'll try.
Right now, folks are trying to digest the totality of hundreds of pages of this legal opinion. I think people are beginning to understand how vastly and how quickly our nation has evolved in our understanding of equal treatment under the law on this issue. So I think there's a lot to take in, and then we'll make the right decision going forward.
Whenever he calls it for a vote, and there are lots of options, the General Assembly is expected to be back in July, maybe later this summer, or during the fall veto session. Harris says the Supreme Court ruling will only help his cause. But just as gay rights activists are redoubling their efforts to get it passed, opponents are sure to do the same. And they, too, are fired up following the court's decision. Bishop Thomas Peprocki, who heads the Catholic Diocese of Springfield, issued a statement saying that the United States Supreme Court usurped its legitimate prerogative through a raw exercise of judicial power by giving legal protection to an intrinsic evil. He called the decision devoid of moral authority. The judicial branch could again play a role in the state of gay marriage in Illinois. A court case pending in Cook County is seeking to strike down the state's ban on same-sex marriage. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
You're listening to the Afternoon Magazine on WILL. The Mississippi River Dam between Keokuk and Hamilton, Iowa, and the nearby power plant were completed 100 years ago. In part three of our series, Damming the Mighty Mississippi, Illinois Public Radio's Jason Parrott looks at how they work together to power the region.
Standing atop the dam offers some breathtaking views. To the north, the crystal blue river seems to stretch for miles, tucked in between hills covered with large homes or bright green trees. To the south, a clear shot of the bridges linking Illinois and Iowa. It would almost be peaceful and serene if not for the noise. That's the sound of water rushing through the large arch-shaped openings in the dam. Larry Wyman manages Ameren in Missouri's power plant near Keokuk's riverfront. The company also owns the dam. Wyman says just a couple dozen gates created that noise.
We have 119 spillway gates, and they've all been opened twice in history, 1993 and 2008.
Those years were two of the worst in history when it comes to flooding. Wyman says that illustrates one of the dam's primary functions, river level control. But he says the gates are not only open during flooding. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers sends water downstream on a daily basis.
What we want to do is pass everything through the plant, and if there's more than that, then we have to open gates and pass it over the dam to maintain our pond at a certain elevation.
Contrary to popular belief, the water passing through the dam has nothing to do with power generation. Instead, it's the water Wyman mentioned earlier that passes through the plant. He says there are 15 giant turbines located beneath the eastern half of the plant. Each turbine weighs about 100 tons with a more than 20-foot diameter.
Units 5 and 6 and 14 and 15 have some original cast iron IP Morris water wheels, Francis wheels in them, that are 100 years old. Those units have never been taken apart.
Each of the turbines is connected to a massive disc-shaped generator. It's the generators that are creating the loud hum you are hearing in the background. In fact, it's just as loud in the plant as it is standing atop the dam with the gates open. Wyman says the water wraps around the plant, entering from the west side. He says it passes through several gates, screens, and chambers before essentially going over a cliff into the turbines. The cliff is the difference between the water levels north and south of the dam.
The design here is for a 32-foot differential between the pond and the tailwater, but in those conditions where optimum, we would get up in the neighborhood of 38 feet.
That's why less energy is generated when the river levels are up. Wyman says the turbines spin at a set speed, so as more water falls, the turbines produce more energy trying to maintain that speed. The plant along Keokuk's riverfront is considered a 140-megawatt facility. Wyman says his best guess is that it could power a small city.
A lot of it depends on if you're just talking about homes or you're talking about businesses, you're talking about industry. I think our power plant typically is considered capable of somewhere in the neighborhood of 75,000 homes.
But the plant is not powering a single city. Ameren, Missouri consulting engineer Dave Ostrander says the electricity is simply entering the company's grid via transmission lines from the plant to nearby substations. The company serves about 1.2 million customers in roughly 60 counties. Ostrander says it's impossible to tell where the Keokuk power goes or how it's used.
It's kind of like water seeking its own level. It flows. And that's what our system operators have to deal with, making sure that, you know, we got the right power at the right place.
Controlling the river elevation and the generation of electricity are tangible functions of the dam and the nearby power plant. The final installment of Damming the Mighty Mississippi will look at the intangibles, what the dam meant to the region after it was built, and even today. I'm Jason Parrott.
You can see the epic story of the Mighty Mississippi on our website at will.illinois.edu.
Support for today's broadcast comes from Burlingame Home Inspection and Performance. Burlingame performs property inspections along with energy audits and ratings for Energy Star, tax credits, and efficiency mortgages, all utilizing infrared technology. More information is at cusaveenergy.com or 217-649-1173.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, the 27th of June, 2013. It's the birthday of poet Lucille Clifton, born in Depew, New York, 1936. Her family descended from slaves. Her father was a steelworker, and her mother worked in a laundry. Clifton went to college at Howard and then Fredonia State Teachers College. Her six young children inspired her first volume of poetry, Good Times. Her second book, Good News About the Earth, was a response to the social and political upheavals of the 1960s, and her third book, An Ordinary Woman, turned inward to consider her dual role as poet and woman. She also wrote several children's books aimed at raising awareness of Black history and culture. It's also the birthday of poet Frank O'Hara, born in Baltimore. While a student at Harvard, he met the poets John Ashbery and Kenneth Koch and got into writing poetry, then moved to New York, where he became part of the New York School of Poetry, influenced by abstract art and modernism. Frank O'Hara believed that poems should be improvisational, like action paintings. In books such as Oranges and Lunch Poems, he wrote very directly about his everyday experiences, taking walks, hanging out with painters, reading newspapers, listening to Billie Holiday. Frank O'Hara, who wrote in one of his poems, "Oh God, it's wonderful to get out of bed and drink too much coffee and smoke too many cigarettes and love you so much." It's the birthday of author and educator Helen Keller, born in Alabama in 1880. She lost her sight and her hearing due to scarlet fever or meningitis when she was just 20 months old. But in spite of her disabilities, her parents could tell she was extremely intelligent. She even invented her own simple system of sign language. Eventually, her family hired a tutor named Anne Sullivan, who taught Helen Keller to read letters spelt out on her palm. But at first, Helen could only mimic the letters that Sullivan taught her. But then one day, Anne Sullivan spelled out the word water on Keller's palm while Keller held her hand in the water from the well. Keller later wrote, "I stood still, my whole attention fixed on the motions of her fingers. Suddenly, I felt a misty consciousness as of something forgotten, a thrill of returning thought, and somehow the mystery of language was revealed to me." Within the next few hours, Helen Keller had learned 30 new words, and by the end of the month, she had stopped.